So, Concept Crucible Podcast, Episode 2.
Was that you starting the podcast, or was that...
Sure, why not?
Was that... I'm not sure what that was. Did we start with a slow clap now?
No. The whole thing, I was talking about it before the first podcast of... In action.
Now you've done it twice. Now I don't know where to cut. Thanks.
Yeah, well...
Anyway, I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
And this is the Concept Crucible Podcast.
Yay!
Like you said. And today's topic is degrees of false beliefs.
Yeah. I still do like disbelief, even though it's not descriptive enough.
Yeah. Disbeliefs with like a hyphen.
Yeah. Dis-hyphen-belief. Dat belief.
But first, we're going to talk about the sort of varying degrees that having false beliefs can affect your life. And what we think about them. We're going to each pick a favorite conspiracy theory, but first we're going to do an icebreaker and talk about what is your favorite CD that you are listening to lately. CD, mind you. Physical media.
I don't remember the last time I listened to CD, because I can remember the last CD I bought.
All right, yeah, I'll take it.
The last CD I bought and then subsequently ripped it to put onto my iPod. I know, no Apple, so Apple give us money.
Apple did not send us any money for this or that.
Anyways, the last CD I bought was from a band called Akaro, and it was at a Killswitch Engage show back in December. They were one of the opening bands. And my roommate and I bought the tickets just because I went there to go see Killswitch. And there was also Miss May I and Darkest Hour and Akaro. No, I'm thinking of the wrong show. I've seen Killswitch like 4 times in the last like 18 months. No, this one was Akaro, Shadows Fall, and Killswitch. It was the first time I saw them after... Heavy TO, the last time Heavy TO ran, because it didn't go last year, the Mud Pit really turned Donington Park off, or whatever that place is. So anyways, so the first time I saw Killswitch Engage after Heavy TO, yeah, it was Akaro, Shadows Fall, and Killswitch. There was 3 Massachusetts bands, and Akaro was the opener. They were amazing performers. They were an amazing, yeah, we'll make sure to link them down below. They were amazing. They had amazing stage presence, especially the lead singer. And they had the best tagline ever of Akaro, who the fuck are they? They honestly did not take themselves so seriously that they did not realize that they were touring with the 2 biggest names in the Massachusetts metal scene. Well, like the pretty much the biggest.
Is the Massachusetts metal scene like super large? Is that like I'm picturing like the MIT metal scene?
No, I mean like it's it's a self-contained music scene, much in the way Seattle was, or
fair enough.
West Coast California was. For New Wave American Heavy Metal, a lot of it came out of that geographic region. Killswitch Engage, Lamb of God's more from Virginia, but they're still kind of geographically in the Mideast or Midwest.
Fair enough.
American. Anyways, we picked up Akaro's. I bought a shirt from them and a CD.
Does it say who the fuck are they?
No, it just says Akaro and really nice, like not quite death metal scratch things, but yeah, and it was the singer who was the guy selling the merch.
Nice.
And we didn't even realize it at first, and he just like comes over and he shakes her hand. He's like, you know, thanks a lot for supporting us. And it's like, holy crap. Like, this guy's so humble, and, you know, the music, they whipped the crowd up into an amazing frenzy. They were a great opening band. They had a great sense of humor, played a great set. And I think they had a song. It wasn't about Macbeth. It was inspired by Shakespeare.
Nice.
So, I mean, you can't really go wrong with a band like that. So, that was the last one that I bought.
And you sound like you enjoyed it pretty well.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. The last CD, actually, the CD I've been listening to for like 5 months now, which is also the last CD I bought at VidCon in California, and it is Lindsey Stirling's CD. Lindsey Stirling is a violinist, and she makes violin dubstep music. She has a lot of collaborations with a lot of people, and it is brilliant stuff. I think she's still topping the charts both on dubstep and classical. She's done 2 or 3 tours now, and she did everything on YouTube.
Oh,
so I got the chance to see her perform both on the main stage and in a private workshop at VidCon. And I got the chance to meet her, and she's super nice and way shorter than I thought she would be. I think everyone's taller on the internet. I'm like 6'9".
Yeah.
Ryan's like 12 feet tall. But yeah, I just and drinking water out of my measuring cup.
Measuring. I was thirsty and I needed water.
You were a savage. But yeah, she was really super nice, and I wanted to. It was one of the things I went there sort of with a mind to buy. I don't usually buy CDs. I don't. For a musician, I don't listen to enough music. I sort of have all kinds of random eclectic things, but generally I prefer silence or like YouTube videos or vlogs or things like that. But I bought my DFTBA wristband and a T-shirt and a board game, and I bought her CD because I knew that if I buy it right there, it's just like buying it at a concert. Most of the money goes to her, mm-hmm. and I want to support her and her work. Mm-hmm. And I get a physical thing, which is kind of cool. And I have been listening to it. When I listen to music, it is still in my computer. It is the thing that I listen to because it is really good. Yeah, that's my favorite CD. I think possibly the favorite CD that I own, but that actually doesn't say much because I only own about 10. Yeah. I've been pirating music for a long time.
I actually did want to ask this before we switch over to the main topic, but have you found now that, A, you're out of grad school, I don't know if it changed much when you were in or out of grad school, but also now that you have a stable income source, do you find yourself pirating less?
Yes, but I didn't pirate a lot before that. During my undergrad, I pirated a lot. Well, actually, I think I've talked about this before. In a different video, which if I did, I will put the link in over here. But very briefly, the thing I used to pirate a lot was games.
Mm.
And like that was my sort of go-to thing. Was like, only a sucker's going to pay $60 for a video game. Mm. I can get it for free and get it cracked. And yeah, sure, it takes me an extra 3 hours of work and I'm three patches behind. But, you know, you make it work. Mm-hmm. And I got Steam. And when I got Steam about 3 years ago, they just made it so affordable to just get games, mm-hmm. that all the games that I had pirated, I now own. Mm-hmm. And I bought most of them while I was in grad school because it was, you know, and before I had a really solid job and that kind of thing, because it was affordable. And it's hard to turn down $5. The only difference between then and now is now I buy more games and I buy games for more people.
Yeah.
Because I tend to, if I'm picking up, you know, a game at the Christmas sale, and I see that a couple of my friends that's on their wish list, I'll just pick up the 4-pack and give it to them. But yeah, I don't really pirate stuff anymore. I mean, between Netflix and YouTube, I don't watch a lot of TV or movies or anymore. I watch a lot of YouTube.
Yeah.
And if you think I should watch your two YouTube videos, leave a comment with your channel, and I'll watch them.
Yeah, maybe in the future we'll do our Follow Friday-esque style thing.
That'd be really fun, actually. I love talking about my favorite YouTube channels. I have a lot of them.
Yeah, so do I. I find, once I got the stable income, and it did help, but also I find that it really is the accessibility issue. When things are made accessible and easier to get legitimately, you kind of stop. You kind of stop having to pirate. Like I got Netflix. Almost all the shows that I follow that are worth following, usually you can get for free from the website. Mm-hmm. With like ad, obviously you have to have ads, but you can usually stream it legitimately from the site. I still do a little bit of music here and there, but it's mostly to test whether or not I'm going to enjoy the whole album, because usually with the bands that I listen to, a lot of the heavy metal stuff, I'll go out and I'll buy the physical copy to support the bands. Mm-hmm. So when I you know, hear the first single off of it, I'll usually go to YouTube, or I might pirate it just to find out what the rest of it sounds like. But more often than not, if I'm really digging it, I'll make sure to go and buy the whole thing. And I'm a physical copy kind of guy. For some reason, I just can't rationally. I know it makes more sense to buy it cheaper as MP3s, but for some reason, I just prefer to have the physical thing. Mm, fair enough. That's what I do.
My big piracy concession is comic books. Mm. I have probably 10, 20,000 comic books sitting on my hard drive that I have pirated. I mean, comic books from 50 years ago, comic books from 2 years ago. And that is a thing that now that only has changed now that I have a sort of a real grown-up job, is whenever my friends and I go to the comic book store, I will always make sure to pick up a couple, either up-and-coming stuff or trade paperbacks of things that I love. Or if you watch the other videos, you can see that on the top shelf right above us, there's a copy of Watchmen sitting there, along with a bunch of comics by my friend Trevor, who makes brilliant autobiographical comics. And you can see his link down below. He's a super cool guy. And it's that sort of thing, is that I want to support independent creators, and I want to support work that I have enjoyed thoroughly over the past few years. And I still have my pirated comic books, and I'm not really ashamed of them. And I distribute them every once in a while. I'm in the process of giving them to my 9-year-old niece, who's really loving comic books. And so I'm bribing her with them so that she'll practice her guitar, which she also really enjoys but hates practicing. But I guess we should actually talk about today's topic. Right. So when we say dis hyphen belief or false belief, what I mean there's a lot of false beliefs in the world. Mm-hmm. I guess part of the question is what constitutes a belief, and why are these false beliefs interesting to talk about, as opposed to, say, thinking that the Dalton theory of the atom is correct. Mm-hmm. Or that glass is a liquid. Glass is not a liquid.
Way to confuse everybody.
Glass is not a liquid.
Glass is liquid. Glass is not a liquid.
You might think the glass is a liquid, like I did, but it is not.
Yeah.
So I would think that a belief is a thought that you have, that you that you hold and endorse and act upon. I mean, you may not advocate that other people follow it, but at the very least, you act upon it.
Yeah, I would say it's not so... I don't want to go as atomistic as, say, Locke in terms of ideas. I'm going to step up a little bit from that. But yeah, I would say belief is an idea or perhaps a proposition that you hold about something. And then a little bit deeper than that, where it becomes like the disbelief versus belief is the truth value proposition, or the truth value of that proposition. So, but I would definitely say at its most basic level, a belief is simply an idea or a proposition about something.
That's fair. I usually tie it in with action, because I mean your beliefs are usually the things that structure your world. A good example of a false belief is I'm colorblind. I did a video about that a while back. The videos go here, links go there. Links, videos. We're still sorting this whole podcast thing out.
I'm new to the YouTube.
If you are listening to the podcast, don't worry. Every video that I say will go here, you can't see where I'm pointing, will also go in the show notes. So you're good. Don't worry, you're not missing anything. Don't worry, you weren't missing anything anyway. But that's not true. No, I am colorblind, and I often have beliefs about colors that are false. They are not true. And I act as if they're true because I can't tell otherwise. Sometimes I think things are red, and I say, oh, that's red, and red goes with certain things, and it doesn't go with other things, and they're like, no. Jim, that's not red. I'm like, yes, it is. It's not. And I know that it's not because there are people who are probably not messing with me most of the time.
Hopefully.
Well, I got fitted for my first suit last weekend. Mm-hmm. For a wedding, and they were picking out colors and putting them on me, and I said, oh, well, this is a very nice green. And they said, this is a brown suit, Jim. This is a brown suit. Upside, up one brown suit.
Brown's a good color to have. Mm-hmm. I need to get myself a... Well, I don't know if brown would look good on me, but definitely brown suits are pretty classy looking. I need to get myself a gray suit, but I have a lot of black suits. I need to branch out of the black suits and into the gray suits.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. I mean, he looks like a government agent all the time, although I don't suppose a gray suit would help that.
Yeah.
But no, so I mean, that's a, so, I mean, we described what a belief is. It's a proposition that you hold. That you may or may not act upon, but I mean, at the very least, I think that the stuff we're talking about are things that you act upon.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll become clearer. So, I mean, a false belief would be one that isn't true.
Yeah, or, and I don't want to get too bogged down in, so in case you don't know, we're both philosophy majors. We went to grad school together. Well, sort of. I mean, I started grad school before you, but you finished before me because I'm lazy.
It's a race.
Yeah, it's an ace, and he won. But nevertheless, not to get too bogged down in kind of the philosophy of truth and epistemology and whatnot, but I would say beliefs are false when they don't correspond to something. There's a bunch of different theories about how truth comes about, if it corresponds to facts about the world, if it coheres with other facts,
We're
deflationary
gonna
accounts.
sidestep all that.
Yeah, we're gonna sidestep all that. I'm just gonna assume a basic kind of correspondence relationship between a belief and something that makes it true.
So, if I believe that my shirt is yellow, does that correspond to reality?
Yes.
Awesome. So that, I mean, that's been a basic thing. So, I mean, and you want to talk about the you've done a lot of work with the gambling lab, and
Yeah.
there's a lot of beliefs that go into sort of how people gamble and how people operate slot machines and a lot of false beliefs.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, I worked with the gambling lab for about 2 years. They send me out to casinos to go collect data on slot machines, and you just get talking to various people. And it's you meet a lot of really interesting people, but you also hear some really interesting beliefs about people, about the world, about how, like, whether or not there is ultimately a conspiracy to take money. And as a researcher, there's this tension there because obviously you don't want to influence the beliefs of anybody who's going to be participating in your study, right? You don't want to give them any kind of sense of what it is you're testing because you don't want to bias your conclusions. So, but for those people who are not going to participate, you also really have to avoid being confrontational and trying to educate them. And this is something one of the other researchers who's with us, we'll call him Carl.
Is that because that's his name?
we'll call him Carl, whether or not it's his name or not, but I like the name Carl. But Carl once was talking to this gentleman, and this gentleman had this, really specific set of beliefs about how the slot machines work and how the OLG, takes money. And I asked Carl about it afterwards. Just why were you so confrontational about it? And he says, well, I mean, I think the university is missing or is often underplaying its responsibility in public education. We spend so much of our time stuck in our ivory towers and working on our own projects that we often forget that we as an institution have a responsibility to share knowledge and to help educate people in the outside world. And it's really interesting when you go to a casino and you listen to people, just those kinds of beliefs that they have to explain things, to be able to rationalize what they see when it comes to gambling with slot machines. Because as Carl and I both believe, the rules of which have been set up by the OLG are not unfair. They're very clear set rules, and the rules are they're transparent. But it's the beliefs that get attributed with, like how what your chances of winning are and the addictive side of gambling, that's where the problem comes from. And so yeah, you just run into some really.
So an example is, I guess, would be something like, I mean, obviously the gambler's fallacy is one of
Yeah.
those, where you believe that past outcomes influence future outcomes.
Yeah, do theory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, you're sitting there and you're like, oh well, I've lost the last 13 spins, which means I'm due for a win any time now.
Yeah.
And on slot machines, on gambling in general, that's not true. Gambling is random. I mean, the slot machines are probably less random than other things in gambling.
No, no,
Gambling in
no, no.
general.
That's that. No,
Oh, okay.
it is. It's.
I don't actually know how slot machines work, so.
Okay. So let's take it a step back. Let's explain what a slot machine is. A slot machine is essentially a random number generator,
Fair
and
enough.
all it is, it's running. It's the random number generator is running all the time, and then all that happens is when you hit spin, it selects whatever numbers are in there, and then it displays the outcome in a graphic form.
Okay.
It is no more or less random than pretty much anything else that does not have a bias. In fact, biased gambling is illegal. Like, you cannot have any kind of bias built in there. You
Oh,
can
well.
hedge the outcomes and pay and set up your pay tables in such a way that favor certain outcomes. Mm-hmm. But that's ultimately how
that's a payout wins. Structure. It doesn't it doesn't I mean as opposed to gambling like poker, where I mean poker is probably I don't know a lot about gambling, to be fair, before I say this, but probably I would think that poker is one of the least random games, because poker is a game about skill.
Yeah, the only
the skilled poker player is going to beat an unskilled poker player most of the time.
Yeah.
And it's not bad luck when they do. It's skill and practice and training. In the same way that, you know, a skilled boxer will beat up me every day of the week, any day.
Yeah. In order to be a legitimate betting form or gambling game, there must be some element of randomness. Like, it cannot be fixed. Think about it this way. If you can ever have a successful strategy, then it's not a gamble.
Fair enough, yeah.
Okay, there must always be a chance that you can lose. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the games can't have varying degrees of control. So as you say, a professional poker player, anybody who knows what they're doing, can take advantage of knowing what the cards are, the communal cards on the table, knowing what you have in your pocket, and based on somebody else's betting strategy, making an educated guess as to whether or not your cards are better or worse than theirs.
Yep.
And then that takes into account that there is a certain element of memory involved in that. Like, the deck doesn't have memory. It doesn't remember what cards are in there from hand to hand, but you can remember the betting strategies of somebody else, and therefore you can make educated guesses as to what they're doing, whether or not they have a legitimate hold or whether or not they're bluffing. And skilled players will, you know, vary these strategies. But overall, for gambling in general, you can never have a successful strategy. So there must always be some uncontrolled element of the game in order for it to be a gamble.
And I think these false beliefs sort of arise when people try and take control of that. I mean, you look at things like what's another fallacy the gamblers use? The sharpshooter fallacy.
Well, yeah, sharpshooter's more about statistical. So like, you know, the Texas sharpshooter goes up to a barn, shoots a bunch of rounds into the wall, and then goes around and draws a circle around a grouping, and then says, you know, that this grouping is somehow statistically significant.
Yeah, I mean, so you look at machines that are paying out, and you say, oh, these are machines that pay out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, they're just machines that are paying out right now when you are seeing them, and it has no bearing. I mean, it mixes together with gambler's fallacy, but all in all, it seems sort of relatively harmless. I mean, I think a lot of the issues surrounding gambling, and I mentioned this before the podcast too, is you know, if you have gambled away your life savings, I don't think the problem is that you have a false belief with regard to the gambler's fallacy. I mean, there are much deeper problems at work there, of which that is maybe a symptom, but it is certainly not the underlying cause.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other kinds of false beliefs that affect the way people structure their whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we want to talk about conspiracy theories.
Yes. Good old conspiracy theories.
Oh, man.
You can't go very long in a comment section without running into some sort of conspiracy theory.
So what is your favorite conspiracy theory?
It's kind of hard to narrow them down, but one that kind of hits with some... Like, I have a friend or two who subscribe to this, or at least have argued with me about it. And as a benign one is probably Hollow Earth.
Is that the lizard people one?
Pardon?
Is it the lizard people one?
Sometimes they're bound up together. Sometimes lizard people live in Hollow Earth. Because I had lizard people. No. Hollow Earth is I don't know simply, about this one. So I don't know much about it either, because I don't... Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. And anytime I've tried to understand it, it just doesn't make sense. But Hollow Earth essentially is that the Earth's crust is so deep, and then beyond that point, it is a hollow Earth. Now, sometimes it's coupled with expanding Earth, so that the Earth is expanding, and that explains continental drift and whatnot. Like I said, Neil Adams kind of explains continental drift with an expanding Earth theory. But I don't think necessarily the two are always tied up. I think you can have one without the other. But yeah, Hollow Earth basically just says...
What is inside the Earth? Like, is it full of nougat?
Probably lizard people, but I'll let you cover lizard
like
people.
Like, it's just... Now I'm intrigued by this thought that the Earth has this creamy, delicious caramel center.
But the moon's like, what made would of you cheese, put in there? So,
I mean, I guess it's... What was it? Lost World, where the Earth was full of, like, dinosaurs? And there was an internal sun or something like that. I don't remember.
Maybe Hollow Earth was what...
No, I don't feel like a real nerd anymore.
Maybe Hollow Earth was what inspired Dyson spheres and stuff. Or maybe the two
are... No, Dyson spheres are totally different. Dyson spheres encase a whole solar system.
Well, just think of a mini sun inside of the planet as being a small microcosm. But I think the idea is, like, yeah, you can walk
Dyson
on
the... Dyson spheres are cool, and I don't want them tainted by his conspiracy theories.
No. Don't get me wrong. One of my favorite... one of my favorite Trek episodes is the Dyson Sphere when they discovered Scotty in stasis. I know, such a good episode.
But yeah, I guess mine is lizard people.
Yeah.
Because again, it seems benign. Like, there's a lot. I mean, it's definitely not the sort of worst one out there. I mean, there's 9/11 truthers and there's Holocaust deniers, and if you are either of these things, I invite you to not comment and share this, because really, like. It opens up old wounds, and it's not good for anybody. Same with, anti-Zionist conspiracy theorists and things like that. You're invited to watch a different video on a different channel, any other channel.
Yeah.
But, except people that I like, because don't go, no. But, no, lizard people, though, like, lizard people seem so harmless, but also so... delightfully imaginative. The amount of effort you have to go to try and prove that the Queen of England is a lizard person in disguise, part of a long line of lizard people who are secretly ruling the Earth, is so incredible that it's one of those fundamentally interesting powers of human imagination. And at the same time, I mean, not a lot of people getting upset about lizard people. I mean, apart from people who believe in lizard people. But again, conspiracy theories, and this leads us into the conspiracy theory sort of segment, is that they don't just structure the way you view a specific thing, like slot machines or, mm-hmm. or poker tables or roulette or something. Mm-hmm. Or even, you know, how gambling works overall, or how casinos work, or the larger sort of infrastructure of a governmental gambling establishment. We live in Ontario, and the government runs all the casinos. Mm-hmm. They have a crown corporation that sort of runs everything, and it makes money that goes into things like healthcare, mm-hmm. which is super cool. Big fan of healthcare. Yeah. But I mean, your conspiracy theory structures the way that you see the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you honestly hold the belief that the government is covering up the existence of aliens, or, you know, if they're secretly ruled by lizard people, or if geologists and seismologists are lying and part of this giant conspiracy to keep the nougat of the Hollow Earth from the people who need it most. I really want to know what's in the Hollow Earth now. Also, I'm hungry.
You should probably just throw a wiki link.
Yeah, we'll get a Wikipedia link down below, and no, I will have sated my hunger for nougat and possibly also knowledge. But I mean, you have to construct a universe in which these things are true. I mean, you have to, you mentioned earlier, you have to explain away all kinds of coincidences, all kinds of, happenstance. And you have to, cause you can't live in a world like that. You have to live in a world where this makes sense. I mean, earlier we talked, like before the cast, we talked about Newtown and the shooting that happened there last year, and how if you live in a world that is run by conspiracies, you can't just have bad things happening to good people. There's got to be a reason for it. Everything has to have a mover or a shaker or something that caused that, and it's part of some greater conspiracy. Mm-hmm. And I guess, I don't know, that makes it really seems kind of sad. I mean, I'm certainly not a fan of bad things happening to good people, but... I mean, and maybe it's my pessimistic philosopher brain that tells me that, you know, sometimes life is just miserable.
Yeah.
But sometimes life is just miserable.
Yeah, suffering is inevitably bound up in the human experience.
Yeah.
Well, not just human, but yeah. It's just really weird when you have benign false beliefs. Yeah, I mean, social media is just rife with them. You just go into your Facebook feed and there's some sort of weird thing about Monsanto or Big Pharma.
I got this privacy notice that protects all my Facebook stuff.
Yeah.
Are also this the everything that happens in this episode you can find on Snopes. Snopes is the most wonderful site on the internet.
I have definitely copied and pasted many a Snopes article into comment threads. But just the main thing is that you have this continuum of false beliefs. But at one end is these benign ones, but at the other end is ones that just completely inform and distort. I'm going to say distort. I'm going to come out and just be like harsh about it. It distorts the way you view reality, much in the same way your colorblindness distorts your reality. I mean, you can still see, but you're not seeing the truth out there. And sometimes these false belief webs...
They would say the same thing about you, my friend.
Yeah, you can if you want, but you're just a shill for for the dye color industry complex. But yeah, so...
Dye color complex is my Beatles cover band.
But yeah, you have this web of beliefs that completely distorts reality and informs your decision making and how you live your life, so that not only is it influencing you, but it starts to influence other people, or you're making decisions on behalf of other people, and it can be dangerous.
Yes, yeah, I don't know. I think the weirdest thing about conspiracy theories is that the simultaneous notion that the conspiracy is so intricate and so vast and so well concealed that it is hidden from almost everyone in the world except for a tiny group of people who are ordinary but are sharp enough to have figured it out. It's like a modern day zombie apocalypse, because in the zombie apocalypse is an apocalypse that you can deal with. We'll probably do a whole episode about apocalypses. It'll be fun. We'll bring in Dan, because Dan really loves talking about the end of the world. But if you're in a zombie apocalypse, it's not like, you know, an economic apocalypse where everything just stops working, or a meteor hitting the earth where everyone just dies. You know, a zombie apocalypse, if you're smart enough, if you're ingenious enough, if you're ruthless enough, you can get by. You can even thrive. You can become a king or a queen in the zombie apocalypse, you know, by being skilled and by having the right set of skills and the right and being prepared in the right ways. And the conspiracy thing sort of seems like that same idea that you know, you are the one who is prepared in the right ways. Everyone else is living in the dark about what this thing is. It creates this sort of, I almost want to call it hubris. I mean, this overweening pride in your own abilities that clouds out all the details that don't make sense. And that is probably harmful. I mean, it's probably harmful to certainly your relationships. I mean, I don't know that something that is harmful to employment prospects is really a real kind of harm. I mean, in the sense that there are lots of things that are completely irrelevant that are harmful to employment prospects, like tattoos. But I certainly think that it would, I mean, I don't know, I find conspiracy theories very difficult to deal with, but that might be because I am who I am and not be necessarily because they are who they are.
Well, from our point of view, there's two levels of harm. Like, from us as philosophers, there's a kind of offensive, how can you believe these things if they're false? Especially if they're demonstrably false.
Like lizard people.
I
guess lizard people is actually kind of unfalsifiable.
I suppose. Like, so, before the show, we were talking a little bit about the conspiracy theory, the preconditions to have a conspiracy theory. Like, you really need... You need a kind of just world fallacy view that, you know, good things happen to good people and bad things happen to bad people. So therefore, anything that happens that's bad, you know, it happens for a reason, or at least there's intentionality behind it. What else did I say? You need... Oh, man. I wish I had my notes in front of me. But
yeah, this is going back a whole 2 hours. But you need to... No, one of the things you mentioned is that you need to be able to explain away everything that doesn't fit while finding inconsistencies with reality, or at the very least what you wind up seeing as part of reality. I think that inconsistencies with reality is maybe a little harsh.
Yeah, as you said, you know, you poke holes in the theory, you reject reality and substitute your own. But by substituting your own, it's completely immune, or not immune, it's completely beyond the point of you allowing other people to poke holes in it. Yeah, exactly. Right?
Anyone who would try is in on it, or they've been duped by it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you see, I unfortunately see this with a lot of conspiracy theory stuff. So I always remember, it came out about 2 years ago. There was a 9/11 truth parody of Rebecca Black's Friday, and I watched it because I like watching parodies of Rebecca Black's Friday. I also like the original for different reasons.
That's a conspiracy.
Nah, it's a long story, but it's a worthwhile story. But, and it was just, I mean, it spent so much time, you know, talking about and making fun of people who had been duped by the man. You know those people, the sheeple. I hate that word so much. But I mean, it comes back to that sort of pridefulness, I think, that poses a real problem. I mean, it doesn't help that there are real conspiracies that have happened. Watergate was a real conspiracy.
Yeah, but we're talking about two different levels of conspiracy. Yeah. Like, usually, conspiracy theory is a more pejorative, you know, idea of...
Well, and it's an actual technological fallacy. Where, you know, the absence of evidence does not indicate the evidence of... I can never get that right on my first try.
Yeah.
Absence of evidence does not indicate evidence of absence. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the fact that there is no evidence for something doesn't mean that it's just been covered up. There might just be no evidence. Like, it might just not be there at all. But that, I guess, I mean, they, like I said, they I guess they're varying degrees of harmfulness. But nothing, I think, nothing beats our third false belief, which is the anti-vaccine movement.
Yeah, speaking of kind of a conspiracy, but it's not really, it's kind of like a pseudo conspiracy theory almost, because it's less to do with big pharma and more to do with people just not really understanding immunology, virology, chemistry, basic, health of populations and whatnot. Like, it's such a weird thing that it is a thing.
Well, and it's I read a blog post recently that sort of presented it as a debate, but it's sort of not. I mean, not everything that has two sides is a debate. There's no heads or tails. The debate. It's just heads or tails. And this is the same way. I mean, on one side there's the vast opinion of what, 60 to 70 years of medical evidence, probably more. Mm-hmm. And on the other side, there are people who are upset about something.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a notion of parental responsibility, but realistically, even if the additives in vaccines have grievous long-term effects, which they don't, but even if they did, those effects would have to be worse than polio for them to even be relevant in the equation. Like, they would have to be so bad that they would have to be killing people. And they're not. I mean, they're everything we have says that vaccines are incredible. Even your flu shot, but especially vaccines that give us herd immunity to all kinds of diseases. There are more and more vaccines because we are beating more and more diseases. We are beating diseases that have plagued mankind for thousands of years. And yes, there are also new diseases that are screwing everyone over, but that is always going to be the case.
Yeah.
It is a medical arms race. I don't know. That is a thing. And not vaccinating can cost you, I mean, it can cost you limbs, it can cost you your health, mm-hmm. It can cost you your life in extreme circumstances, right? And more importantly, like, especially, I mean, a lot of the anti-vaccine movement centers around parents, And to be perfectly fair, neither of us have kids.
Yeah. Full disclosure.
Yeah, but...
That we know of.
That we know of.
Yeah.
That would be weird. But, no, I mean, there's a sense in which, you know, parents do need to be responsible for their children, but, I mean, vaccinating your kids is the responsible thing to do. It protects them from things that you are otherwise impossible to protect them from. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's there was a campaign a while back about passing around like lollipops from kids who had chicken pox and things like that, you know, to develop immunity. Well, or you could just get the vaccine and it does the same thing, only better.
We're almost out of time, so I want to kind of bring up 2 points that I think we talked about this before the show or before when we were preparing, but they both rely on the same thing, and this is idea of personal experience. A lot of times with anti-vaxxers or climate change deniers, there tends to be this emphasis on either personal experience or experience of trusted others that are only within a couple degrees of separation. So the first point that I read about, so I was reading the Globe and Mail today, and they had a discussion about it, and it was poll results, and we'll put the links down below, poll results of people's attitudes towards anti-vaccines, or sorry, towards vaccines and why they don't get it. And some 49% of the Canadian population won't get vaccinated for various reasons. And the two big ones, 35 or 36% don't believe or don't agree with what's in the vaccine. So they have a problem with the vaccine itself. And then 35 to 36% of the people will not get it because they never get the flu. And I'm always baffled by this because that line of thinking is the same as saying, well, I never wear my seatbelt.
You never wear your car seat?
Yeah, I never wear my
car seat in years.
Anyways, but I never wear a seatbelt because I never get thrown through my car windshield. Like, the point is not that you do this with a regular frequency that you get sick. It's the idea that you get the flu shot or you wear your seatbelt to try to prevent more harm from happening. Because, I mean, let's make a concession here. With a vaccine for the flu shot, it doesn't protect you 100%. It boosts it by like 40%, your resistance to getting it, or at least it mitigates it. The problem is that's 40% that you didn't have if you didn't get the vaccine.
I guess to harken back to our gambling point, is that if you were playing a slot machine where you knew that the odds of winning were 40% better, why would you play any other machine?
So there is that element. It's just... people who say, like, I never get sick or I never get it. Obviously, there's other things going on when it comes to protecting yourself from the flu. I mean, limiting the amount of time you're exposed to people with the flu. Proper hand washing techniques, making sure that you're not exposing the open mucous membranes or open wounds to getting infected.
Stop motorboating people with the flu.
Yes.
Stop it.
Especially if they're cut.
Stop it.
So, obviously, there are those things. But nevertheless, like, the flu shot is such a small cost to prevent something that could be a lot worse, especially because right now H1N1 is the current strain that's making the rounds. H1N1 in 2009 was the biggest like threat to us. It was the one that was predicted to be the global pandemic because it typically doesn't affect the old and young in the way normal flu season does, but in fact usually attacks healthy not middle age, but the middle group between old and young. So, I mean, for such a low cost, especially because in Canada, our government provides it, why wouldn't you want to get it? As you said, like, the cost of getting the vaccine somehow outweighs, like, okay, I'm not going to get the vaccine because I am perfectly fine to live with polio, or I'm perfectly fine to get the flu.
Like, polio just builds character.
Yeah, and it's crooked spines and stuff. So
also that.
Like, you become Captain America. That might be a precondition. He had polio in the original series.
Did he? I didn't know that.
I think so.
I don't think so. I think he was just small.
We should find out. Anyways, so that was point number one. Point number two, going back to placing personal emphasis, is people will often think, like, I either got sick. There's this kind of technical term here. Post hoc ergo propter hoc. So because
after the thing, yeah, therefore because of the thing.
Yeah, so I get the flu shot, I get sick after the flu shot, therefore it's because of the flu shot I got sick. In some cases, yes, you do get sick from a reaction to it. I mean, people with egg allergies are encouraged not to get the flu, or it's only in extreme circumstances. But people will often put so much value on, you know, their experiences of like, I only got sick afterwards. And it's a lot of the times it's the same thing that what happened with the last polar vortex, where people, you know, saw that the temperatures dropped to negative 30 or negative 40, and made also the other thing I hate, that stupid meme that went around that, you know, Canada or Winnipeg was colder than Mars. I hate that. That was so stupid. The CBC, thank you CBC, you ran an amazing article dispelling why that was so stupid. You people should read more from the CBC and keep funding the CBC.
By you people.
Anyways.
I don't know that our listeners are capable of funding the entire CBC.
Just pay your taxes.
Stephen Harper, if you're watching.
Yeah, please give the CBC more money. They do good, very good things.
CBC did not pay us for that.
No, they did not. I just love the CBC. But anyways, after the last polar vortex, there was a number of people kind of jokingly, but in some case seriously, saying like, oh, what's this deal about climate change and global warming? And the most vocal people who were defending climate change were saying, look, your individual experience, your one piece of data of it happened to be unseasonably cold does not change a global trend. Like your little blip is an outlier. It's not even an outlier. Your blip is just static, or it's just background noise.
Sadly,
in what's going on.
Statistics does not care about your feelings, nor does it care how cold you get, when it's really cold, even when it's almost possibly, but not really, colder than Mars. With that, we will leave you from the broadcasting from the frozen north currently.
Yeah, and it's about to get colder too. We're heading.
I don't want
to
talk about it.
Okay.
This Saturday, I'm jumping into a giant pool of frozen water.
There might be videos of that.
There will definitely be videos of that. Unfortunately, I am going to freeze my nutsack off. And with that lovely mental image, we will leave you. I'm Jim.
And I'm Ryan.
And we'll see you guys later.
Stay awesome.
Every fucking time. I'm not even in my seat yet.